From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. John William Boone, who's widely known as Blind Boone, was a figure in Columbia beginning in the late 1800s. He was a music prodigy, and with his piano, he played an important role in the development of ragtime music. The city of Columbia purchased Boone's downtown home 16 years ago, and this year the John William Blind Boone Heritage Foundation opened the house in mid-September. It's located at 10 North 4th Street and can be used for community events. We talked with Clyde Ruffin, who's president of the foundation's board, about Boone, his house, and what it means to Columbia, especially as an important piece of African American history. So the Blind Boone home recently had its grand opening. Can you tell me how long that opening was in the making?
Wow. Well, the planning for the grand opening, we did in a relatively short time, probably about a month worth of planning. We had to be sure the house was going to be ready, first of all. Once we knew that we were coming in for the home stretch, then we went into overdrive in terms of the planning. But it was a joyful process, full of lots of energy, because we've been working on the restoration of the home for almost 20 years.
Wow.
So when it's time to open it, you know, you don't have to motivate people. The motivation is already there.
I imagine. And how did this plan to renovate the house begin 20 years ago?
Well, it actually predates my involvement with the foundation by approximately 3 or 4 years. But it really began with a group of relatively young people in the community who were passionate about history. And Wina Faye Tapp Elbert, who worked for the Department of Parks and Rec, was a local historian and educator, and I call her a visionary. Mm-hmm. She was very passionate about the documentation of African-American history in Columbia, which almost no one had paid much attention to. And so she started the project. She knew that it was Blind Boone's home. She knew that it had historical significance. And when she found out that the Warren Funeral Chapel was moving to a new location and Mr. Warren was going to put the house on the market, then she said, we've got to save it. We've got to preserve it from someone just buying it and tearing it down, making a parking lot, or someone taking it and using it for some other purpose. She wanted it to be preserved as a historic home.
And it's quite a big house. Who was Blind Boone that he could build such sort of a lovely big home downtown?
Well, by Victorian standards, it's a very small house.
Really?
Yes. Very small footprint by Victorian standards. For an African American living in the city of Columbia in the late 1880s, it is quite an achievement. So Blind Boone was born in 1864. His mother was a contraband slave who worked for the Union Army. He was born in Miami, Missouri.
And does contraband mean that she'd been taken from the Confederate side?
She liberated herself.
She liberated herself.
That's one way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
and was taken in by the Union Army, where she worked as a laundress and a cook.
Mm-hmm.
While there working, she became pregnant by William S. Belcher, who was the bugler, a really short guy, a little more than 5 feet tall, 18 years old, but a masterful musician who could play anything on his bugle. And that's Blind Boone's father. Mm. So his mother's Rachel Boone. His father was William S. Belcher. His name is John William Boone. He was not born blind, incidentally. At the age of 10 months, he contracted brain fever. And in the medical practices of the day, they felt the only way to relieve the pressure from his brain was to remove his eyes. So they removed his eyes, and it relieved the pressure and may have, in fact, saved his life at that time. Goodness, thank goodness we don't do that anymore.
Right, yeah, that's shocking. So he wasn't really born into a particularly wealthy family.
Oh, no.
He sort of made him, he made himself.
No, he was born with significant challenges, the challenge of race, the challenges of disability, and at the time, being raised by a single parent. I mean, you know, it's all of the typical challenges that you should have signaled a life of very low achievement, but it did not. He demonstrated, by all accounts, just a joy for life and for living, that he played sports and baseball and did all kinds of things, even though he couldn't see. He played, he created music on tin pans and with tin whistles and all kinds of things, and became such a darling of the community that the community actually raised the money to send him to St. Louis to go to the School for the Blind.
And I was reading a little bit about it, his life. It sounds like he eventually left the school to just sort of make his living on the streets as a musician.
Well, yes, because at the School for the Blind, as you can imagine, they wanted him to learn how to make brooms, because that's what blind people are supposed to do, make and sell brooms. And hopefully, you know, they could teach you how to, you know, read a little Braille or something like that. And that was supposed to be your life. Mm-hmm. But there was a teacher at the School for the Blind who was also a pianist. And he saw the talent in John William and began to work with him. And, of course, because he was truly gifted, he was frustrated with this whole broom making stuff. So he ran away and he found his way into some of the houses of ill repute in the St. Louis area, where these men that they referred to as professors were innovators in terms of music. And Blind Boone was so gifted that he could recreate anything he heard after just hearing it one time, and so. That's how it all started.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM, and we're talking with Clyde Ruffin, president of the John William Blind Boone Heritage Foundation.
And when did Blind Boone start building his house?
It was built as a wedding present. Built by his brother-in-law, John Lang Jr., who was also his manager, because Blind Boone married his youngest sister, Eugenia. And the house was built sometime between 1888 and 1892. I've heard that there's a document that says that he took full possession of the home in 1892. I have yet to see that document. And so we always say the house was built in 1890. Just to be safe.
And what would the area around the house have been like at that time?
We have a photograph, a historic photograph of the house that has a little white fence in front of it and some people in a horse and buggy going in front of the house. So at that time, you would have been able to look from the porch of the house and see the creek and see just a green open space. There was a livery stable on the other side of the creek. And it probably would have been a very pastoral setting. Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Columbia was, at that time, and some people would still say today, sort of a segregated city in a lot of ways. Was there any resistance to Blind Boone as this upwardly mobile person who was able to live this life?
Well, we know that he experienced significant racism when he was on tour because he was not allowed to stay in hotels and you know, the railroad travel was segregated. Mm-hmm. But we also know that within the city of Columbia that he had such a philanthropic spirit that he really didn't see that as a barrier to anything he wanted to do. So he gave money to help build the chapel at Columbia College, which was then Christian College. He gave money to all the area churches. He was the first African-American to join First Christian Church on 10th Street. And so he didn't allow that to stop him.
And when you first came into the organization, what state was the house in?
Oh, wow. It was in really bad shape. Mm-hmm. We had no money. We had no money. The city had purchased the house, but then that was it. And so we were constantly trying to find ways to raise money or get volunteers or do something.
And it eventually cost $800,000, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
Needless to say, we didn't raise that kind of money. Mm-hmm. We tried, but it was just not happening. And so we were able to do little things along the way. But if it wasn't for the partnership with the city, the house would still not be done. It's as simple as that. There were federal grant programs that we were eligible for, but in order to qualify for those, you had to have a significant track record and community support and all of that, and we were really struggling in that area. And so the house just continued to deteriorate. So,
and what did they find in the house? I know when you open up an old house, it can really be filled with surprising things.
Well, we had been working on the demolition ever since 2000.
Uh-huh.
They tore off the siding and the stucco that had covered the house for many years and opened up the porches and started to take some of the old stuff that was abandoned inside of the house, furniture and just all kinds of scary things from many years as a funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
Was still in the house. Yeah, so. And then there's no electricity, there's no plumbing, there's nothing. Everything has been taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was a shell.
A shell,
mm-hmm.
Literally, yeah. And then, of course, there's the whole historic restoration phase, trying to salvage as much as we could of the mm-hmm. original millwork and all of that, and floors, and we couldn't save all of the floors, so we had to take floors out of flooring out of one area, put them in another area because there were huge holes in the floor and things like that. And then to make it functional for today, the whole house had to be rewired for Wi-Fi and burglar alarm systems and all of that. And then because the money was running low, they just painted everything white, apartment white.
And I bet that's not the historic color.
No. And textured walls to save time and money. And it didn't look at all like a Victorian home. It was done. It was stable. You could turn the lights on and the water ran.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing there that said this was a grand Victorian home. So then it really fell back to me and to the board to start fundraising and getting sponsors and lobbying and doing all kinds of things to raise the money to really store it to something that was historically appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And did that money come from the community?
It came primarily from the community, from local businesses, banks and various other entities that said, we want to see it done properly, and private individuals. And the city found some more money to help us out and sent some labor as well, you know, to help with some of the things that that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked with the Historic Preservation Commission to make sure that the choices that I was making were historically appropriate. And it worked. And we had volunteers. We had a woman who made all of the draperies for free.
Wow.
We had one person in the city who paid for the restoration of the piano, which was in terrible condition. He paid for it.
And that was Blind Boone's own piano.
Practice piano, yeah. And it's so interesting that the guy who refinished the cabinet of the piano then volunteered to come and make sure that all of the furniture that we had collected, that there were no scratches and no dings, and he did all of that on his own, you know.
A lot of people's labor of love then.
Labor of love, absolutely. And the man who did installed the wallpaper did an amazing job. I mean, it has become one of the things we talk about when we give the tour is the wallpaper, because he not only installed the wallpaper beautifully, but he covered all of the vents, each slat of the vents with the wallpaper and matched it precisely to the pattern that was on the wall.
That's amazing. And so when you look at this house that is such a labor of love, your time and so many people's time, how do you feel when you see it today?
Well, tired. No, the greatest reward is when people come in to the house. Some people come into the house and they're amazed because they know what it was like before, because, you know, it was the only funeral home that was marketed to the African American community. Mm. So there are many people in the city who remember what it was like before, and when they come in, they are just blown away. In fact, the last owners of the funeral home, the Warren family, came to the grand opening, and they were amazed.
I bet.
But there are other people who have never been in the house who come in, and there's such a feeling of pride when they see the photographs hanging on the wall, and they realize that this was a home that was occupied by African-American people in our community in the 1890s. Really? Really? Little kids come in and they're just amazed. And we've had people cry because they are just so moved by it. And I feel like, well, this house only has, you know, three rooms on the first floor, and it's not that big, but people are touched by it. So that's the greatest reward.
And what will the house be used for going forward?
Well, that's an interesting question. When the process began in 1997, one of the things that the mayor asked this committee to do was to survey the community and to hear from the community to find out if the community wanted to save the house. Mm-hmm. And if they wanted to save it, how did they envision it should be used? And so we have those survey results in our archives. And the overwhelming responses that came back from the community said, first of all, yes, we want to see the house saved, but that we want it to be a place where children will feel welcome, where there will be activities and music and things going on. It was never intended to be a museum.
Right.
And so we have just kind of followed that vision all these years, and now we have the facility to make it happen. And so that's how we plan to promote it, as a gathering place for the community that is available for meetings and retreats and small parties and receptions and recitals and concerts and book readings and tea parties and many other things as people see fit.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM, and we're talking with Clyde Ruffin about the opening of John William Boone's restored historic home. Two of our producers, Molly Olmsted and Sophia Zhang, went over to the Boone House for a tour led by Ruffin.
So can you tell me what room we're in right now?
We're in what would be considered the front parlor room. I guess in a typical house, this would be the formal parlor. However, when Boone lived here, he had very little furniture, at least from what we can tell. We only have one interior photograph of the house, and it's in black and white. So much of what you see is just our leap of our imagination. But there is some indication that at one point when he was living here, he had as many as seven pianos in these two rooms.
So what did this room look like before you started renovating?
It had been a funeral home since the 1930s. So it didn't look anything like what you see. It was very dark. The porches were filled in to create more space for the funeral home. There was a chapel built on the side of the house over here. There was a big garage in the back where they stored the hearses. It was in significant disrepair in 2000. There was water coming through the roof. There was termite damage halfway up. It was just really, really bad.
Well, in contrast, do you think you could sort of describe the room that we're in right now?
Yes, in the front parlor, when you come through the door, one of the things that we were able to do, I worked with the Historic Preservation Commission to select wallpaper that would be reflective of the Victorian era. What we were doing in a very subtle way is to use earth tones and floral and leaf patterns, so that even subliminally, it sort of reminds you of a traditional African motif. So that, you know, it's Victorian. You get the sense that people of African descent may have lived here.
So can you tell me about the piano?
Yes. The piano was built in 1904. And as far as I know, it has been in the house for as long as anyone can remember. There are several stories about when it came to the house, but we do have a photograph of Boone sitting at the Chickering piano in this room, and you can see this piano in the background in the same location. It was in such disrepair. I mean, for 14 years or more, I know of it, set in the house when there was no heating and there was no air conditioning. There was nothing, just the elements. And the piano was damaged. The ivory was coming off the keys. The finish on it had turned black. And then we took it out and we put it in storage at the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And then we took it out of there and we put it in storage with Parks and Rec in their warehouse, where it was unheated, you know. And when we got it back to the house, it was covered with green mold. It was in really bad shape. There was a huge rat's nest inside and lots of droppings. And so what you see now is a miracle. It has been beautifully and immaculately restored.
Do you want to tell us about the pictures?
We had to really work on this one to fix it and recreate it. But it is a picture of a Masonic lodge standing outside of St. Paul's AME Church on Fifth Street here in Columbia. Boone was a Mason, and he's standing in the back here. And this is significant because this building is still standing. They still have church services there every week. But also because at the time, the Masonic lodges for African-American men and women, they met in churches because they were not allowed to meet in other locations. But you can see from the photograph how proud the people are and how well-dressed they are. The men are all, you know, with suits and ties and bow ties and bowler hats, and the women are all immaculately dressed in white with hats and all of that. But what's interesting is that the ground in front of the church is just grass and mud. And so it gives the sense that this church at this time was out in the middle of a field, whereas now it's surrounded by public housing.
If you had to describe Boone to someone just based on his pictures, how would you describe him?
He was short. They say his father was, according to military records, that his father was 5'2". He was short as well. So Boone was short and round. And he always wore chains, and he had his pocket watch that was a gift to him, was a birthday gift. And that pocket watch is stored in this State Historical Society. And his Masonic medals. So he always wore those, and you'll see that on all of his pictures. We don't know what this room would have been when Boone lived here, but we call it our gathering room. It is the only room on the first floor where you'll find furniture. The purpose for that is that the house is intended not to be a museum, but to be a place for meetings and parties and receptions and recitals and things like that. So the first parlor one and parlor two, are all open space, and so the things are all movable. We can use it for exhibits. If we want to take the historic photographs down, we can hang other paintings and things like that. So that's why that room is this way. So this is the place where you come and you hang your coat, you know, or you come and you sit down if you want to chat a little bit. This room also has a custom-made display case that has some interesting artifacts that we have been holding on for years. On the bottom shelf, we have one of his original piano rolls. He was never recorded because he was so early on, but he did make several piano rolls that were recorded.
Is that a balcony over there?
That is a balcony.
What can you see?
Well, let's go see. see the top of the church next door. Well, you know, it's just interesting, especially if you look this way, when there are fewer trees, because you can see all the way up to the water tower, and all the way over there. And I always tell people, come out here and imagine what this would have been like when 4th Street was Flat Branch Creek, and none of this was here. And all of this was just open green space with a creek. And the house had a little white fence in front of it. And there was a road, and people go up and down the road in their horses and buggies. It was a very different feeling. But you have to come up here to imagine all of that.
Thank you for joining Intersection as we talked with Clyde Ruffin about the Blind Boone home, which was built for and lived in by musician John William Boone. The house was renovated over many years and opened for events this month. And a note, we've listened to some ragtime music during the show. That's not Blind Boone's music, but it gives us an idea of the style he helped form. I'd like to thank our producers, Mary McIntyre, Molly Olmsted, Sophia Zhang, Danielle Hogarty, and Rachel Foster Gimble. And thank you to our guest and tour guide, Clyde Ruffin. Please tune in next week as we discuss water pollution. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here on KBIA 91.3 FM.